Good morning, Cowboys Nation, and welcome to another episode of the Writer's Block Podcast. I'm your host, David Hellman. Brandon Clemens is not with us this time, but we do have a very special guest from A to Z Sports Dallas, Mauricio Rodriguez. Great friend of the show. Very happy to have Mauricio on to talk Cowboys, because this is our first podcast for the Writer's Block ever where Mike McCarthy is not the head coach. Of course, the decision was made on Monday. It's unclear necessarily whose decision it was, but Mike McCarthy will not be back as the Cowboys head coach. So needless to say, there's a lot to talk about in Cowboys land. Mauricio, how are you doing? How are you feeling? What are your general vibes around the Cowboys after the bombshell news on Monday?
I am excited, David. I think that's the word that I will use. I'm a little bit underwhelmed about how things went down, and I've been a little bit skeptical about the way that the Cowboys went about things, and I know fans are excited. And I wouldn't say that I'm excited for change, right? Because I'm not sure I'm buying that a lot of change will come to Dallas, but I'm still excited. I think that an offseason with Mike McCarthy at the wheel would be a little bit long, right? Because last offseason was, it felt like an absolute eternity. But now that you were talking about, well, who's going to be the coach, things are exciting in Dallas.
Yeah, last offseason felt like three full offseasons. It was awful. And
yeah,
I mean, so I've been like probably one of the three most staunch Mike McCarthy supporters since he got to Dallas. I was banging the drum all year long that he should be given another contract. He should be brought back. But I've already, you know, I talked until I was blue in the face. And actually last week we got, you know, Brandon actually admitted he's come around and he saw the light, so to speak, and said, yeah, I'm good with bringing him back. And that apparently was the kiss of death because now McCarthy's gone. But what was your general vibe, your feeling on McCarthy? Did you think like they should have moved on from him? Did you want them to bring him back? Like where did you fall on that spectrum?
Well, I maybe it was a little bit of a pessimist on the pessimist side, in the sense of I wanted the Cowboys to move on from Mike McCarthy. I just didn't have a lot of hopes that they would bring in the type of coach that I would want to replace him, right? And I think this is the sense that a lot of Cowboys fans have had during this process, where you're like, Ben Johnson would sure be nice, but they're never going to bring in Ben Johnson. Todd Monken from the Ravens, man, I would love that, but you know they're not going to bring him in. Because it feels like for the Cowboys, there are one or two requirements. Either you got to know them, and you got to know them very well. They got to know you more than anything, right? Or you need to have that head coaching experience that gives them some sort of safe feeling that, hey, we're not going to suck with this guy at the wheel. We might not go all the way. We might not go to the Super Bowl, but we're not going to suck. We're not going to become an irrelevant franchise. And I think with Ben Johnson, with names like that, you run that risk just because they have never done that job before. So I wanted the Cowboys to move on from Mike McCarthy. But if you were to tell me, well, they're going to bring in Ron Rivera to replace Mike McCarthy, then I would have been like, let's run it back, right? Let's just do this thing. But the other thing was, and when we learned about the contract length being an issue, I wouldn't want to have Mike McCarthy back on a two-year deal. Like, that is just no way to do business in the NFL. I think you put yourself in a losing position in so many ways. So if this is what had to happen, then I'm down for it.
Yeah, I think if the fact that the contract length was an issue, like you said, I mean, that's where I kind of look at it and say, like, for sure, this was Mike McCarthy and his agent, Don Yee, who he brought in this past offseason. Don Yee also represents Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh, Tom Brady, who's kind of having a rough go of it as a broadcaster, but seems to be doing, you know, really moving up in terms of control of the Raiders that he has now a minority interest in. And I think this was kind of McCarthy and his agent saying, like, hey, like, commit to us, or, you know, we're just going to go our separate ways. And like, whatever the answer is, like, let's not drag this out any longer. And like you said, it's no way to conduct business. But also making your coach into the final year of his contract is also no way to do business, which was a big part of why this past offseason sucked so much is like every single day it's talking about, hey, what's going to happen when this guy's gone? And he's trying to build a staff. He's trying to get a new defensive coordinator. He's trying to, you know, attract free agents. He's trying to do draft prep. And the whole time there's all this chatter. And like, you're not going to have success. And it feels like that's been the case every single year for Mike McCarthy. Obviously, you know, he comes in and there's briefly a little bit of excitement around him. And then immediately after that, you know, COVID hits, changes the offseason structure completely. The installation of schemes is thrown off. And then, you know, all the injuries and the season goes poorly. And after 1 year, people are like, oh, is Mike McCarthy going to be one and done? Like, is Jerry Jones going to fire him after just 1 year? Obviously, they brought him back. Then they, you know, have a great year in 2021. Offense is breaking records left and right. Get bounced in the playoffs. Oh, and now are they going to fire him? A year later, the 49ers bounce him again. Are they going to fire him now? You know, and then there was the Packers loss, and that's where we're at now. And so it's like every single year there's been conversation about, like, is this the year that he gets fired? And if, you know, if it's true that Jerry Jones did not want to give him a real commitment, a lengthy contract, I don't blame him one bit for saying, you know what, I don't really need this. Like, I know my worth. I know that there's a bunch of other teams out there that would love to have me. Which, by the way, speaking of, Mike McCarthy is now set to interview with the Bears on Wednesday. And it's also been reported that he'll be talking with the New Orleans Saints beginning of next week. His first offensive coordinator job was with the Saints. As I mentioned, his agent also represents Sean Payton, who has a lot of history with New Orleans. So it seems like there could be some interest there. It's going to be really interesting to monitor how his market plays out. Are you going to be rooting for McCarthy going forward with a new job if he gets it there?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be rooting for him, right? But I'm excited about the prospect of him getting a job. Like, if I'm watching this from the Cowboys content creator point of view, then that's going to make for a heck of a story, right? If he heads to an NFC team and then he starts being successful, then it really brings up some interesting talking points on the Cowboys world, where it's like, well, McCarthy might have not been the issue. And even more so, if at the same time, you've got Dan Quinn killing it in Washington, and if Kellen Moore stays in Philadelphia or whatever he does, he might end up in Dallas. I'm sure we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, it really speaks volumes about the organization. I kind of think that McCarthy is going to end up in Chicago. Like, that's one of my gut feelings. It's been so for a while. Like, I had a story, I don't remember if it was in November or December, for A to Z Sports, just connecting the dots and being like, what if McCarthy decides to go to Chicago? Like, what if McCarthy takes the decision out of the Cowboys' hands? And it's kind of what happened. Maybe not in the same exact way that I laid out in that article, because I was talking more about how McCarthy was going to be a free agent and it was going to be his decision. And again, it did end up playing like that. But at the time, I was just like, they got a young quarterback. McCarthy is known as a guy who can develop QBs. He did so with Aaron Rodgers. He worked with Joe Montana back in the day, and he learned a lot from that experience. And that's what he's always been known for. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears are like, we want Caleb Williams to be a true top quarterback in the league, and McCarthy gives us a good chance at that. And he also would give the Bears like some sort of upgrade in terms of, well, in terms of a franchise, right? We look at things from the lens of a successful franchise in the regular season that hasn't gotten it done in the postseason. The Bears are trying to get to the postseason, period. Like, that's what they want to do. So I could see the front office being like, let's go for the safe option. But yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to be rooting for him, but I would want him to get a job. I think it would make for a cool story where he's walking out on a deal with the Dallas Cowboys and headed elsewhere. And Troy Aikman is talking about a coveted job and the Dallas not being that, then that would be the prime example of it, right? It would be fun.
Yeah, it'll be, if it happens, it'll be fun to see for sure. I think the Bears, to your point, like, Bears fans would sign up for a 1-3 record in the playoffs in a heartbeat, because they'd be like, we made the playoffs? Like,
the thing about the Bears is that the thing about the Bears right now is that they would be upset as heck if they don't get Ben Johnson, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, every team that has an opening, including the Cowboys, their fan base wants Ben Johnson, but a lot of fan bases have wanted Ben Johnson the last two cycles, and a lot of fan bases have had to quote-unquote settle. Obviously, it worked out for the Commanders with Dan Quinn. They had a really good year. But, you know, I think Mike McCarthy in Chicago would be fun because I think he'd be a really good coach for Caleb Williams, similar to how, you know, with, you know, last year when he took over play calling in Dallas and kind of shrunk the playbook down a little bit and instituted this sense of like you're hitting, like Dak Prescott, you're hitting your first or second read and then you're going into scramble drill. With the way that Caleb played this year and the talent he has as a player, you know, I think a lot of times you saw he struggled when he was holding the ball too long. And so if you can get him on that internal clock and say, all right, you're hitting your first read, you're hitting your second read, and then get out of the pocket and do what makes you special. I feel like that could be a system that helps him really unlock his potential. But I kind of think he's more likely to go the route of the Saints because I have a feeling the Bears are probably getting Ben Johnson. If not, I think they've probably already made up their mind on who their fallback option is at this point. And I think also just, I think there's some sort of like perception based thing there of like, we can't hire Mike McCarthy at this point. Like the fan base will not forgive us. Whereas New Orleans is in a weird spot where, you know, their salary cap is completely messed up. They don't know if Derek Carr is going to be back next year as their quarterback. Really, I mean, it's not a super desirable job in terms of the talent there. And Mike McCarthy having so much experience, having a, you know, connection to the franchise, being a stable force for both the Packers and the Cowboys, I feel like that almost is like a comforting choice of like, we can get Mike McCarthy, he can like help stabilize things. But it'll be interesting to see. We've already had some twists and turns in this coaching cycle, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Mike McCarthy with all these openings. And with all this talk about Ben Johnson too, the timing of the Cowboys moving on from McCarthy, of course, complicates things more. Because last week was the time for teams to interview guys like Ben Johnson, Aaron Glenn, any of the Chiefs coaches while they were on their bye. Now at this point, the Cowboys won't be able to interview any coaches for current playoff teams until their team is either eliminated or until after the Super Bowl is played. So if, you know, if they decide we really want Ben Johnson and we're going to wait to make a decision until we can interview Ben Johnson and the Lions go to the Super Bowl, you're waiting a really long time. And then if Ben Johnson decides, oh, I'm actually taking the Bears job or the Raiders job, you know, you're left with a very small pool of candidates then to interview. So they're going to have to get a little creative in who they talk to. They've already gotten creative as it was reported Monday night that Jerry has spoken with Deion Sanders, of course, legendary Cowboys player, now the head coach at Colorado, Coach Prime, as he's now known. And I mean, this is, you know, the social media was abuzz with this news. Everything from like Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport, Jordan Schultz, they've all said basically like the two sides have spoken. There's mutual interest, no formal interview, nor no interviews scheduled at this point. They're going to be in touch. Not really a whole lot to go off of there. What are your impressions of the Deion Sanders connection at this point?
When that notification hit my phone and we were watching Monday Night Football, I was like, holy smokes, like top candidate, because that's the verbiage that Jordan Schultz used, right? Like he's expected to be a top candidate for the job. And when I read that, I was like, damn, like they might, like for a second, I was like, they might really pull off something crazy like this and it will be chaos. And then, you know, cooler head prevailed and I was like, I don't know if this makes a lot of sense. The biggest issue with Deion Sanders and the Cowboys is that $8 million buyout. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the Cowboys not wanting to commit to Mike McCarthy on a four-year deal, a five-year deal. That's because of the money, right? That's because if you fire the coach, you're going to have to pay him anyways. And I don't think Jerry Jones wants to do that. The reason why I don't think he wants to do that is that he allowed Jason Garrett to hit a contract year twice. And then Mike McCarthy later, when, as you said earlier in the show, That's not how you do it in the NFL. No other team does it like that. And I think that's because the Cowboys like to save some coin whatever they can, which is upsetting for Cowboys fans, especially when Jerry talks to the media and says, I would write a check with so many zeros to win the Super Bowl, and yet with a position that is not bound by the salary cap, he won't even do extensions for his coaches. But with that being said, there's that, right? Deion Sanders buyout. And then do you think Deion Sanders to the NFL would be a cheap contract? I kind of doubt it. And not even because of the football impact, but just because of the character that he is, what he would represent for the franchise, even the merchandise, I think you need to factor in here because he's not like any other coach, right? Deion Sanders is a character and people would get fired up. I don't know if diehard fans that analyze everything will be fired up at Deion Sanders, but your casual fans, they're going to love the Deion Sanders hire if it happens. That being said, I think it's no coincidence that that's the name we've heard about the same day that they moved on from McCarthy and that we were talking about how it was kind of McCarthy's decision to walk out on Dallas. The same day that Troy Aikman went on the pregame show for ESPN and just roasted the Cowboys brutally, saying that they're not a coveted job, saying that the last time that there was an empowered coach in Dallas was Jimmy Johnson, and just saying the quiet part out loud. And then hours later, we get the Deion Sanders news. Now, Jerry benefits from this because of what he himself told us in the Netflix trailer. Keep him talking. And it's a 365 days soap opera a year. And then later he says something about like, oh no, yeah, keep him talking. And then what I was going to say is Deion Sanders benefits from this because it might be extension time in Colorado. So I found it funny that when Deion Sanders, Adam Schefter tweeted out the Deion Sanders quote, the Deion Sanders quote was, this is the one phone call that I would pick up, right? So it's like the narrative had gone from Deion Sanders could go to the NFL to there's no way Deion Sanders leaves Colorado. He's got too many key recruits. He's flipped the top QB of the recruiting class, blah, blah, blah. And now it's gone from, oh, but for the Cowboys, maybe I would pick up that phone, right? I already did. So I think it's a leverage play in that sense. That would be my read on the whole situation.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And, you know, I have a bit of a unique tie to Deion Sanders in that, as listeners know very well, because I never shut up about it, I went to Arizona State. I'm a big Sun Devils fan. And they're in the same conference as Colorado. So I pay close attention to, you know, what happens in the Big 12. So like when Matt Campbell interviewed with the Bears, the Iowa State head coach, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, which Iowa State players would Arizona State raid in the transfer portal if he leaves? And so similarly, it was reported, I think last week, that Deion had a contract extension on the table from Colorado, but that he hadn't signed it yet. And that was around the time that it was reported he was interested in the Raiders job. And then it came out like Raiders don't really have an interest in Deion. And so now I'm like, okay, now Deion is, like you said, he's saying, oh, this is the one phone call I take. Like, I love it in Boulder, but, you know, yeah. I don't want to leave Boulder, but. And it reminds me a little bit of Matt Rhule back when he coached at Baylor, where he had interviewed with the Jets after, I think, after Adam Gase was fired. And he was interviewing for the Jets, ironically, at the same time that Mike McCarthy was interviewing with the Jets. And he was said to be very interested, but ultimately things broke down because there was the ownership didn't want him to bring a bunch of his assistants from college to the NFL. And then he came back and he framed it as like, you know, oh, I have so much interest from these NFL teams, but I chose to be at Baylor because it's special. And like, that was his recruiting pitch. And so I'm like, one, Deion can use this for leverage in contract negotiations, but also it helps him on the recruiting trail to say, hey, America's team wants me. Jerry Jones wants me.
That's a very good point.
From a Super Bowl winner for me. And I said no, because Colorado's the place to be. So I mean, and also, yeah, it also serves Jerry's interests in that, you know, you've got a Monday night football game, playoffs between two teams that the game didn't turn out very good, but it was, you know, two teams that were really, really good throughout the year. And all that they talked about at halftime was Deion Sanders to the Cowboys, for real. Yeah. Nobody wants to talk about Sam Darnold getting the yips. Nobody wants to talk about Matthew Stafford carving up an elite Vikings defense. Like, it was Deion Sanders, and Cowboys were at the forefront of the conversation. So Jerry gets his, you know, he keeps his streak of 365 days of soap opera. Deion has a little bit more leverage in those contract talks. I'd be surprised if this actually happened for a lot of reasons, many of which you already outlined, but also, I mean, he was successful at Jackson State. He had a good year at Colorado this year after being really, really bad the year before. But I mean, the main appeal for Deion as a coach is the fact that he has that personality to be an ace recruiter. And we've seen that at Jackson State and then at Colorado with Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, you know, some of the guys that he's flipped in the transfer portal, like you referenced. That doesn't quite translate to the NFL because, of course, there's free agency, but like, there aren't a whole lot of guys out there that are going to come play for the Cowboys just because, oh man, I really want to play for Deion Sanders. Like, you want to get that money. You want to get the guaranteed money. And Stephen Jones doesn't play that way. So
I don't know when it's the last time that the Cowboys missed out on a free agent because the recruiting pitch wasn't good enough. The Cowboys, they right. just don't partake in free agency at all. That's yeah. that's a problem, right?
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, and if Deion were the head coach, I'm sure he'd be, you know, talking to all these free agents and be like, hey, you got to come to Dallas. But then they'd be like, okay, get me on the plane. And Steven would be like, we're not going to let him use our plane. Like, you know how much that costs?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a big problem there. Now, if it were to happen, though, and I know there's going to be a lot of mixed feelings on it, he's definitely not going to be my preferred choice for coach. There's so many others that I would prefer over him. But the one thing that I could say is that it would be the biggest risk that the Cowboys have taken in a while. And just the fact that it's different, it might end up being a positive, right? But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen at all.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to watch. It's one of the few hires out there at this point that I would be like super, super against. Because I was, you know, a few months ago when we were all talking hypothetically who they're going to hire, you know, before it looked like, oh, they're going to keep him. And then, of course, things changed. I was like very much against Bill Belichick, and I was very much against Mike Vrabel, who were like two of the most common names. Now that those guys are both unavailable, Belichick could theoretically leave North Carolina, but again, there's the buyout question. It's a larger buyout. And then Vrabel just got hired by the Patriots. I'm like, those are the two that I was like really against that seemed realistic. So not a lot of these other guys would make me feel like, oh, this is a really bad move. Deion kind of would, just because I don't think that his appeal is recruiting. That doesn't translate here. He's not really an X and O's guy. Like, not to say he's not smart, but he's never been a coordinator. And when he came to Colorado, he hired Sean Lewis, who was the Kent State head coach, to be his offensive coordinator, fired him midway through the year. And then Pat Shurmur, a longtime NFL coach, came in as their offensive coordinator. And like, you know, they were good enough this year. And Pat Shurmur was basically just like empowering Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter to like, you know, do the things that they do, which is, you know, be athletic freaks. But like, if Pat Shurmur's his offensive coordinator, I'm not interested at all. I'm curious about who his offensive coordinator would be. We talked a little bit in the pre-show about, you know, Deion does have a relationship with Mike Zimmer. He played for him back in the day. Zimmer also served as an analyst at Jackson State for a couple of years when Sanders was there. So he might retain Mike Zimmer, which I would be a big fan of. But all in all, like, I don't think that there's a whole lot of appeal there, at least for me. I don't know that it moves the needle. And I think more than anything, the fact that like Deion has remained really close with Jerry, and they're both, you know, they're friends, and they have a lot of mutual respect for each other. And people point to that as like, oh, they like each other. They know how to work together. That's why they can work together. And I'm like, I think that makes them not want to work together because Dion knows Jerry's not going to listen to him, and Jerry knows Dion's not going to listen to him. I think they're both are probably going to be like, yeah, this would not go well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it does play against them, right? It's an interesting clash of personalities for sure, because part of what has worked for Colorado is they gave Dion the keys. Like, mm-hmm. It's your show, do your thing. Not only like football-wise, but even like marketing-wise. It's Dion's show in Colorado. Yeah. He wouldn't have that power in Dallas, like not at all. And then you could get the friction for sure. And you hit the nail in the head. One of the things about Deion Sanders is for you to really evaluate if it's a good move or a bad move, you got to know who the coordinators are. You got to know who the staff is. Because one of my theories with Deion is, well, that recruiting magic that he has for players, he might put together a super staff if he ends up making the jump to the NFL. Like names that haven't even been with him in Colorado, I would assume. But overall, not a big fan either. I'm not going to lie. Just for the chaos of it, I would enjoy it. If you're going to tell me, let's do the Ron Rivera thing or do Deion Sanders, I would have more fun just doing Deion Sanders thing, even from a content creator point of view. But yeah, I think it's not going to happen. Deion, I think the most likely outcome for him is that extension out of Colorado, and it's going to be a significant one, I guess, right? He makes around $6 million per year now. I wouldn't be surprised if that is around $15 million next time that he gets that deal. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think, like you said, from a content creator standpoint, would be a bit of a gift. But
I told management that at A to Z Sports that, hey, if this happens, I'm going to need a 700% pay raise because I'm the content is just not going to stop at all. Like, it's going to be nonstop. Yeah.
Now I want to give you your flowers too, though. Something that should also earn a raise, though maybe not 700%, but you tweeted this out. I think yesterday, a screenshot from your Slack Friday, where you said after the reports on negotiations about to kick off with Mike McCarthy, you wrote three things that I think. Cowboys are trying to convince Mike McCarthy to stay, not the other way around. I think Mike McCarthy is high up on the Bears list, and that if it's not a done deal, you said it's not a done deal that he stays in Dallas. And you know, when you said this, everyone was saying like, "Oh, it looks like they're going to get a deal done over the weekend, and he's going to stay." So right there, props and congratulations for sniffing everything out and knowing where it's at. So with that in mind, with your knack for predicting, I want to see who do you think is going to be the coach? And then also after that, who do you want as coach? Because sometimes, I think probably most times those are two very different things of who it's going to be and who you want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. They're different things, right? I think if I'm going with the prediction first and we are going by what we just said about the requirements to be the Cowboys head coach, the name that I find to be the likeliest, and this is obviously before we learn about any name that they're considering beyond Deion Sanders, and we're saying right here, they're likely not considering him, but that's the name we know so far. I'm going to go with Kellen Moore. The reason why I'll go with Kellen Moore is that they love him. I really think they do. And one of the biggest things that tells you that is the fact that when they hired Mike McCarthy, former Super Bowl winner Mike McCarthy, they still told him, but there's one condition. Kellen Moore is your offensive coordinator. I think that is gigantic. Like, that's a big, big thing to do when you're hiring someone like McCarthy. Because when McCarthy was, Mike McCarthy, he was calling the shots in Green Bay. And for them to be like, you're not going to run the offense, I thought that was massive from Dallas. It tells volumes about what they think about Kellen Moore. And then, sure, they fired him. Well, they parted ways with him, right? They who broke up with who? Oh, it was a decision from both of us. Yeah, right. They basically fired Kellen Moore. And I think at that point it was like, well, we're not going to promote Kellen Moore right now to head coach. We want to keep Mike McCarthy. Let's just give him a chance to run the offense. But still think they didn't really want to do that. I think it was more of a decision from the point of view of Mike McCarthy almost giving them that ultimatum where it's like, man, you got to let me call my plays before you fire me. And that's what we saw. But yeah, like I think Kellen Moore is the one guy that I still think, hey, they might. Here's the thing. And I'm sorry for all the rambling, right? But when I talk about, okay, it's got to be someone they know or it's got to be someone with previous head coaching experience. You mentioned it earlier. Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick, they're off the table. Who is left with that profile? It's Ron Rivera. It's John Gruden. It's who else exactly, right? Because Robert Saleh, you might want to say, hey, previous head coach, and you might be right. But is it the previous head coach of the Cowboys like? Because I think that the Cowboys want longevity or someone who has had longevity or someone who has had the level of success, right? And if you're going by someone that they know, well, who makes more sense than Kellen Moore in that sense, right? So I would say Kellen.
I think that would be so interesting. And I agree, that seems very, very likely. And for me, I think back to like when they moved on from Kellen Moore, right?
Yeah.
Shortly after Mike McCarthy like actually had, you know, practices and like started installing the offense and like players saw what he was trying to do. Cause like they didn't completely scrap the playbook entirely. They changed some of the ways that they went about, you know, building these plays out. They talked a lot about like syncing up Dak Prescott's drops to the receiver route so that there was better timing there, you know, simplifying a lot of things. And there were all these comments from Dak Prescott, from Jalen Tolbert, from Kevontae Turpin, all these different guys saying like, this is so much easier. Like, I know exactly where I'm supposed to be now. And all of these comments, like nobody ever specifically said anything bad about Kellen Moore. But the general theme when asked about what's different for Mike McCarthy versus Kellen Moore was like, this is a lot simpler and I actually understand the playbook now. And, you know, so then Kellen Moore goes to the Chargers and everyone, when he goes to the Chargers, like, oh, this is going to be so much better. Like Brandon Staley finally has his good offensive coordinator. Justin Herbert is going to become the quarterback everyone thought he was going to be. And then it didn't. And the offense, like they had some moments here and there, but then you also saw some of the things that Kellen Moore struggled with in Dallas. And then obviously the Chargers were terrible and Brandon Staley got fired. And now Kellen is in Philadelphia where, when you watch that Eagles offense, it's like you can see some Kellen Moore stuff in there, but it also is still some of the same stuff Nick Sirianni's been doing with Jalen Hurts. Also, Saquon Barkley helps a lot. And
yeah.
Like, not to say that Kellen doesn't deserve any credit for what the Eagles have done this year, but, I mean, when you got a running back who goes for 2,000-plus yards, that makes everybody's job a whole lot easier. So I wonder how different he is, how different his offense is from there because, you know, 2 years now in where, you know, Jalen Tolbert has blossomed as a receiver, Kevontae Turpin has showed more confidence and savvy and being able to play receiver. CeeDee Lamb, I mean, he was already really good before when Kellen was there, but he's taken it to a whole new level. I wonder if bringing Kellen Moore back ends up like doing harm because all these guys are like, you know, maybe we didn't necessarily know we wanted to get rid of him, but now that we have, like,
yeah,
we see what the problem was. And then to bring him back is like, is that really going to work? Is it just going to lead to more of the same issues that they had before?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on all of what you said. I think it's a matter of what did Jones think, right? And that's the problem with this, right? Like, because if we're thinking about, well, what would be positive change, then get whoever is from the Shanahan McVay tree and let's just take that, let's roll that dice. But yeah, I agree with all that you said. I'm not in love with the Kellen Moore pick. I will say this, out of the options that we just listed, right? Like if you give me Rivera, Gruden, I would pick Kellen Moore over those two guys personally. Yeah. Like now, one thing that I do wonder about is he did have Mike McCarthy over him and then the Jason Garrett era before him, right? Like he would, this would be the first time it's Kellen Moore as the top offensive mind in Dallas. And I don't know if that means any change, but it could be like that. It could be a promising characteristic of this, but I'm not sure still, as you said, if Kellen Moore has really changed or not.
Right. And that's, you know, we don't really know that from the outside looking in. That's one of the things you have the interview for. But yeah. Again, then you question, like you said, the Joneses know him. How in-depth is that interview really going to be? I mean, we know Jerry and Mike had a sleepover last time. And yeah. I still have so many questions about that. But if you were Jerry Jones, though, because, like you think it's going to be Kellen Moore based on that's who Jerry Jones will pick. But and you actually wrote an article about this for A to Z Sports that I like. It really got like kind of caught me by surprise and got me thinking. But the guy that you want, I think, is someone who's not really on a whole lot of people's radars just yet, but probably should be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And shout out to Stevie, Cowboys Due Diligence, over on Twitter. He was the first one that I saw bring him up. Wes Phillips. Now, not Wade, Wes Phillips, right? The son of Wade, grandson of Bum. And I could totally see the Cowboys liking Wes Phillips. It's out of left field for a lot of people, as you said, but here are the dots that we're connecting to get here, right? One of the requirements that we've mentioned on this show, they got to know you and you got to know them. And they know Wes Phillips. He was with the Cowboys staff from 2007 to 2013. That means two things. He was there for a good while and he survived the transition from Wade Phillips to Jason Garrett, which is absolutely significant, right? The fact that he stayed on board from one head coach to another. I think that is very valuable. Now, that is why I could see the Cowboys being like, okay, let's bring Wes Phillips in for an interview. The reason why I like it, though, is that he was with Sean McVay when Sean McVay was an offensive coordinator at Washington. Kyle Shanahan had just left for the Falcons head coaching job. McVay was promoted and in entered Wes Phillips, right, as an assistant coach, later tight end coach. Then when Sean McVay went to the LA Rams, Wes Phillips followed him. And in 2021, he even was the passing game coordinator for the Super Bowl team from the Rams. That's the McVay gene that I've been wanting in Dallas, and I'm sure a lot of Cowboys fans have been wanting in Dallas for a long time. And the reason why is it seems to work, right? It I don't know about the Dolphins with Mike McDaniel. I know they've had their ups and downs, but that also might be a talent issue. I think McDaniel as a play caller is pretty exciting. Kyle Shanahan is working, obviously. McVay worked. Kevin O'Connell is working with the Vikings, and that's where Wes Phillips is right now. He's the offensive coordinator for Minnesota. A lot of people will be concerned about, well, he really hasn't called plays because Kevin O'Connell calls the plays in the Vikings. Well, neither did O'Connell before getting the job at the Vikings, and neither did McDaniel before landing with the Dolphins. I personally really want that Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan gene, and if I'm looking at the candidates from that profile, Wes Phillips is someone that makes sense just because he's been with the franchise before for so many years.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense when you break it down. Wes Phillips, of course, like you said, he was there on staff. When Wade Phillips became the head coach, he came in as the assistant offensive line coach. And then Jason Garrett retained him and promoted him to tight ends coach. It's fascinating to me because Wes Phillips, he actually played quarterback in high school and college, has only ever coached offensive line and tight ends, like never coached quarterbacks. That's like so weird to me. It's like, hey, I know you played this position, but like, we're not going to let you coach it. And then he still gets to go be an offensive coordinator in Minnesota. Kevin O'Connell, I think, is one of the you know, top 10 head coaches in the NFL right now. I think,
yeah.
Obviously they didn't have the performance they wanted in the wild card round, but a lot of that is on Sam Darnold, who, you know, he played well enough all season to get them to this point, largely because of the offense that Kevin O'Connell called around him. Wes Phillips is absolutely a part of that. Like you said, he's worked with Sean McVay in LA and Washington. The only thing that I think could hinder that, well, maybe not the only thing, one of the things would be it's not a flashy enough hire. But something that strikes me is obviously, like you said, he stayed on from Wade Phillips to Jason Garrett. On its own, it's one thing to stay through a coaching change, but especially when the coach that just got fired was your dad, to stick around is one thing. But then the way that the Cowboys moved on from him when he went to Washington, this is, you know, really getting into the deep cuts of Cowboys lore. But after the 2013 season, the New York Giants had just had a pretty bad, you know, their second bad year under Tom Coughlin. They changed up some of their staff. One of the things was their tight ends coach, Mike Pope, who had been, you know, he's been around forever. I think he was like a 40-50 year coaching vet at the time. Very, very well respected tight ends coach. And Jason Garrett actually played for the Giants while Mike Pope was there in the early 2000s. And so they had a little bit of a relationship, and basically Garrett was like, hey, we got to get Mike Pope on the staff. And essentially they were like, hey, Wes Phillips, like, we're kind of letting you go because we want to go get Mike Pope. And that's, and then Wes went to, in the division, goes to Washington, and obviously has, you know, hitched his wagon to a winner because he's had a really good career ever since then. I don't know for a fact that there's still, like, you know, bad blood there. But I'm wondering, it's like, on one hand, like, yeah, you fired my dad, and then also, you know, you kept me, but then a few years later, you essentially fired me for some guy that had, you know, only a couple of years left coaching in this league anyway. I'm curious if that plays into it at all, but
well, also, the interesting
they
part,
they might not even interview him. So
yeah, they might not even interview. And I think this is like, as you said, a low profile name that not a lot of people are going to get excited about. But I will say the fact that he's such a low-profile name, like if he gets a head coaching offer, I don't think that bad blood keeps him from taking it, right? Because he's not Ben Johnson, basically, with his choice of whatever team he wants, basically. So that would make for an interesting decision for Wes Phillips. But as you said, like this is a name that I can get behind, that I'm excited about, that I think is a realistic option. And then again, I'm also like, Wes Phillips, like, does that have the Jerry Jones kind of vibe to it? And maybe the answer is no.
Right. Yeah. And that's why we're separating it between what we want and what we think will happen, because, you know, Jerry does what Jerry wants. But I actually, the coach that I want is also working alongside Wes Phillips in Minnesota. And I don't think it's a particular surprise that, like, I mean, the Vikings were, you know, they won 14 games. They're the first team to ever win that many and not host a playoff game. And they did it with a backup quarterback. It's not a surprise that, like, people are looking to the Vikings for future head coaching candidates. The guy that I really want that's not going to happen is defensive coordinator Brian Flores. In some ways, I think he does fit that mold of, he does have that head coaching experience. He was the head coach in Miami for 3 years. And it's really interesting because, like, he came to Miami in 2019 and everybody, like, universally agreed they're tanking for Tua. Like, you see, they set the record for the most roster transactions in a single season. They started Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. I was looking at it earlier today. Their top defensive back was Nick Needham, who's now a third stringer on the Dolphins. Their top pass rusher was Taco Charlton, who we all know and love. I mean, that was not a good roster, and they were supposed to have the worst record in the NFL, and he goes 5-11 with them and loses out on the top pick, and they still get Tua Tagovailoa because, you know, unfortunately, he suffered the injury in college at the time that he did, and so he was still able to fall to them in the draft. And then the next 2 years, they win 10 games the next year and somehow miss the playoffs, but they win 10 games. The next year, they stumble out the gates. Tua gets hurt and misses a significant portion of time. But they finish on a hot streak. They go 9-8. It's the first time in almost two decades that the Dolphins had consecutive winning seasons. And then they fire Brian Flores. And obviously there were a whole lot of different things that went into that. Flores has a lawsuit currently ongoing with the NFL. He you know, sued the Dolphins. And it's funny, like, in the lawsuit, one of the things he alleged was, like, yeah, the owner hated me because I kept winning when he wanted me to tank. And everyone came out after that and was like, whoa, we would never do that. As if as if Thanks for Tua wasn't like the number one trending hashtag on Twitter that whole year. And, you know, so then since then he spent a year with the Steelers on Mike Tomlin's staff. And then the last 2 years, he's been the defensive coordinator for the Vikings. And the biggest, like the biggest criticism of his time in Miami was poor relationship with Tua Tagovailoa and inconsistent offensive results. And of course, now he's been with Kevin O'Connell for the last 2 years. And there's been a whole lot of stuff written recently about, like, he's learned a different approach. He had only previously worked under Bill Belichick in New England. He's learned how to kind of manage the quarterback a little bit better, how to have a softer approach while not completely changing from his style of an intense and demanding coach. And you hear some quotes from some of the players for the Vikings defense, and they talk about, like, I love Coach Flores. Like, he makes things so much fun. Like, he puts us in such a position to be so successful. And, you know, they had two different Pro Bowlers this year who both of them, it was their first time making the Pro Bowl. These guys, like, love him. Kevin O'Connell loves and vouches for him. And to your point, too, about, you know, finding somebody with that McVay Shanahan gene, you know, obviously Brian Flores, the big question is, who's your offensive coordinator? Having coached with Kevin O'Connell, I think there's a very, very good chance that whoever his offensive coordinator is somebody that he gets through a connection from Kevin O'Connell. And it could even be quarterbacks coach Josh McCown.
Yeah,
who, of course, is in Minnesota right now and just helped Sam Darnold have this incredible year, had played alongside Darnold in his rookie year with the Jets, is also a Texas native. I think that's important to consider, too. He grew up, I think, in the Houston area, played college ball for SMU and then later Sam Houston State. And so I look at that and I'm like, you're telling me I can get the Brian Flores defense, which outside of the Lions and Rams has shut down every other offense out there, including, by the way, the 49ers several times. And you're telling me I can get a McVay type offense with Josh McCown, who has a rising star in this league as a coach. I really like that, but I also don't think it will happen because of the lawsuit. And, you know, Brian Flores has gotten requests from several teams to interview. It sounds like some team is going to hire him, but Jerry Jones being Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and Jerry Jones are specifically named in his lawsuit as well. I think that adds a layer of complexity to this situation. So I'd be surprised if there's an interview there. But again, that's why this is who we want, not what we think will happen. But if I were the one in charge, I'm bringing Brian Flores in for an interview today. And I'm saying, like, what would you do differently? Sign me up.
Yeah, man, I love that idea. And I've listed Brian Flores as a coach that I think the Cowboys could realistically target. So maybe there's some hope there. But I agree with you. The lawsuit is difficult to figure out. Like, I don't know how that impacts into the Cowboys search, specifically with Jerry Jones and what you mentioned about the lawsuit. But I do know this. I think Cowboys fans want an offensive play caller from the Shanahan-McVay tree because they want a game day advantage. Mike McCarthy did not give you that game day advantage play calling wise. Brian Flores does, right? Like, Brian Flores maybe on the defensive side of things, but this is a guy that on Sunday, he leaves his stamp in every single game. And I think he's grown so much too. Like, sure, he's always been that mad scientist that likes to blitz a whole lot. But I also don't think he's a Wink Martindale where that's the one trick he's got. I don't think he's the man-to-man coverage, blitz behind man coverage, and then just try to do it over and over again. I think Brian Flores can now blitz with zone coverages, with man coverages. He can blitz from two high looks, from one high looks, and he can adapt to the opponent incredibly well. When the Vikings ran over the Green Bay Packers in the last time they faced each other, Matt LaFleur went out to the media and he was like, man, I didn't expect them to play a lot of man coverage. And that's what they did. And I think Brian Flores is just so good at adapting that defense. So I would be on board for this choice right here. I would be excited about it even. And if you can get Josh McCown as offensive coordinator, man, hell yeah, I'm in. Like that's a guy that I love. Josh McCown, obviously, now with this McVay Shanahan gene in him, it would be even more fun. But even when you hear stories about him as a backup, you just know he's a remarkable teacher. I remember that Johnny Manziel Shannon Sharpe interview. The last time that he was there, he talked about Josh McCown being like, stick with me and I'll teach you how to be a pro quarterback. Now, Johnny Manziel maybe didn't want to do all that, right? Yeah. But Josh McCown was there for him and he showed him like, this is what it takes. And maybe Johnny Manziel at that point was like, nope, I don't want to do this. But yeah, still, I think McCown is a great teacher. I would be all in for that.
Yeah. Well, and to your point about like Brian Flores and his blitzes too, like, It was the most like mind-blowing thing watching the Vikings this year. I don't know if it actually this played out through the full season, but at one point about like just over halfway through the year, the Vikings led the league in plays where they blitzed or where they rushed six or more defenders, and also led the league in plays where they only rushed three and dropped everyone back in coverage.
Yeah,
like just in terms of mixing it up, like. He does everything, and you literally never know what you're going to see. And a guy like Matt LaFleur, who's one of the best play callers in the NFL, I mean, Brian Flores had his number both times. And also, I'm like, you're telling me we get Brian Flores, we get Josh McCown, we get Brian Flores with Micah Parsons?
Like, man, that is insane to think about.
Yeah.
Truly insane. And you saw what he did with Andrew Van Ginkle this year. Who's like a guy that can also drop back and into coverage. Now, I'm a fan of just letting Micah Parsons rush the passer and just let him do his thing. But he can drop back into coverage, and man, he could be like an elite version of what we saw with Van Ginkle and everything that Brian Flores did over in Minnesota this year.
Yeah, I think like again, I don't think it's happening. I'm not getting my hopes up for it.
Let's not daydream about it, says David. Let's quit the daydreaming right now.
Yeah, like I'll throw it out into the universe so that everyone else can daydream about it, and then I'll move on. And while I think that, like you said, Kellen Moore, I think Kellen Moore makes a lot of sense. What I keep coming back to, what I feel like is like kind of super obvious to me is that the one that's going to be the pick is Pete Carroll. And of course, Pete Carroll was the Seahawks coach for a very long time, won a Super Bowl. Last year, he like stepped away, but like wasn't really his choice. He wasn't technically fired, but he was. Seahawks moved on from him. And now the reports are he wants back into coaching. He interviewed with the Bears. He interviewed with the Raiders on Tuesday. It said that he really, really, really wants to get back into coaching. And I'm just looking at this. And I, like a couple of weeks ago when it first was dropped that Carroll wanted to come back into coaching, I saw this like graphic somewhere that then rung true with me on Monday when the McCarthy news broke. There's only three coaches that have ever won both a national championship and a Super Bowl. And it's Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, and Pete Carroll. And I was like, golly. I thought about that on Monday and I was like, there's a 1,000,000% chance that Jerry brings him in and says, you're my next Jimmy Johnson. You're my next Barry Switzer. And I'm like, it's not somebody that I'm necessarily going to say like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's all get on the Pete Carroll train. But I don't necessarily hate it either. I think like Carroll did a lot of things really well in Seattle. People forget how bad the Seahawks were when he took them over. And within a few years, they were in the Super Bowl. And they were, you know, one good running play away from winning two in a row. And, I mean, Dan Quinn has gone on to a really great career, largely under the tutelage of Pete Carroll. They had some really great defenses back in the day. And also the last offensive coordinator Pete Carroll hired was Shane Waldron, who he plucked from Sean McVay's coaching staff. And he's always kind of hewed to that West Coast wide zone scheme to some degree. It's funny because the guy before that was Brian Schottenheimer, who's now in Dallas. But I'm not looking at Pete Carroll and being like, yes, please give it to me. But
yeah,
I'm like, of all the options out there, like obviously he has the experience, plenty of experience. He's also like he's got the energy, even though he'll be 74 at the start of the next season. But like even last year, like he has energy. Like he plays like a guy who like can keep doing this, you know, for a while. And
yeah,
you know, he also has that personality to where, you know, he might be able to like kind of convince Jerry on a few things and say like, well, we did this in Seattle. And like, you know, whereas Mike McCarthy was, you know, very, he was like probably a little too direct in how he, you know, had his conversations with Jerry. I feel like Pete could kind of like finesse him a little bit and just like, and be like, all right, and now we got to do this. And here's why, because when we did it here in Seattle, like here's how it worked out. And Jerry can be like, oh, you know, that's a good idea. But also Pete could say like, man, I've already won a Super Bowl and, you know, won a national championship. I don't need to put up with that headache.
Yeah. And man, I understand Pete Carroll as a legit candidate, right? We've talked about needing head coaching experience. And I just mentioned, hey, I don't like the candidates that are out there. I even forgot about Pete Carroll temporarily there. But let me tell you something. If they hired Pete Carroll, you get September, that game kicks off, Pete Carroll will immediately have broken an NFL record. And that would be the oldest NFL head coach to ever coach a game. He would be the oldest ever to coach a game in NFL history. And that's a big question mark for me, because I agree with you. It's insane how much energy Pete Carroll has. He has more energy than me, and I'm 25 years old, and it's crazy to see. But at the same time, you're signing him to a four-year deal, probably. Or maybe he does take that two-year deal that Jerry Jones wanted to offer Mike McCarthy. Who knows, right? But what does that project look like? That's my question. And it was the same with Bill Belichick, right? Like, okay, say you bring back Bill Belichick. What does this look like 5 years from now? At 78, what is Pete Carroll's goal, basically? And that's a big question mark, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to, at least for me, in terms of like being okay with it. Yeah. And again, that's not, you know, I obviously I want Brian Flores. I'd take Wes Phillips over Pete Carroll at this point. You know, I'd take several guys first before then. But I see the path to where it could work out. But the question then is like, well, from a resume standpoint, he's kind of got the same resume as Mike McCarthy, right? He did something successful somewhere else, won a Super Bowl, you know, has been in the league for a while and knows, you know, what to do and what not to do. You know, and then you're like, well, now we've got the same kind of resume, but he's like 20 years older.
Yeah.
How does that really help us? There would need to be some sort of like succession plan in place. And so then that begs the other question of who's your, you know, future coach that you're going to have on staff and kind of groom to take over, which at one point it seemed like that was the plan with Kellen Moore and, you know, kind of was the plan with Jason Garrett before then. And it came to fruition in one way or another. So I don't know. It would be really interesting to see, but I feel like there's definitely going to be, I don't know if there'll necessarily be an interview, but there's going to be interest there because Pete Carroll just, it seems like such an obvious pull for Jerry Jones. Yeah, and similar to Dion, it's going to get headlines. Like Wes Phillips may not necessarily break Twitter if they interview him, but Pete Carroll coming to Dallas, everyone's going to have some takes about that one.
Yeah, 100% agree. I could see it happening for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I think either way, though, we kind of agree that whoever it ends up being is not necessarily somebody we're going to be all that enthusiastic about, which I think more than anything just reflects on the state of the Cowboys and like where the fan base is so much at odds with how the organization operates at this point. Do you think it is a coveted job? Troy Aikman said it's not. Other people suggest it's like the top job that's open right now.
I think it's not a coveted job when you talk about, well, who are they considering? And or who would consider that job, right? And here's what I mean. For Ben Johnson, it cannot be a coveted job because the offer is not going to be strong enough. Mm-hmm. You know you're not going to be calling the shots. And I think back to the last few top head coaching candidates, and I think they wouldn't have come to Dallas. Jim Harbaugh wouldn't have come to Dallas. I don't think Jim Harbaugh would have seen this as a coveted job. The key is, though, that there are so many few of these jobs. So if they do offer it to, say, Pete Carroll, and that's the only strong offer on the table, then, yeah, he'll be fine with it, and he'll take it. And the same goes for names like Kellen Moore and Wes Phillips and all of these guys. But, yeah, I think that automatically the fact that you are ruled out from the top coaching candidates, that means that it's not a coveted job to me. That's how I view it. And as such, I do agree with Troy Aikman when he says, hey, it's not what many people think. Because many people say, oh, it's the Dallas Cowboys. It's like the New York Yankees, right? Everyone wants to be the manager of the New York Yankees. But the Yankees will likely pay you. And I know the Yankees have, you know, changed their spending habits. But still, you know what I mean. The Cowboys, I don't think, are a coveted job because of that.
Yeah, I would agree. And I feel like it's, with all due respect to the Chicago Bears, it's because my wife is a Bears fan, so and her whole family is. So I have to be careful. But
okay,
I think it's a sad day though when the top candidate on the market seems more likely to be interested in the Chicago Bears than the Dallas Cowboys. When, you know, I mean, Caleb Williams, you know, obviously a lot of flash around him, a lot of hype around him, but also, you know, he just had his rookie year, wasn't exactly like lighting the league on fire. Dak Prescott's been around for a very long time and he's played at a very high level. Like that on its own, the hype of the organization, the history of it, the fact that you've got Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons, you would think makes it a very coveted job. And then for Ben Johnson to be like, I'd rather go to Chicago where coaches go for their careers to die, pretty much. Yeah. And they haven't won a Super Bowl since 1985. Then go to the Cowboys because I think I'll have a better chance of success there. So yeah, I agree. I don't think it's a coveted job, but also at the same time, somebody out there is going to convince themselves that it is. And they're going to, you know, I mean, Mike McCarthy did it 5 years ago and they're going to be like, oh man, I got to get this job. Like Cowboys, like I'll be set. And then they'll find out.
And
we'll probably be in the same conversation a few years later. But until we get to that point, you know, we'll be, of course, you know, here at the Writer's Block talking all things Cowboys and, you know, going through it all together, as always, as this coaching cycle unfolds. It's going to be very, very interesting to see who they talk to, who they interview, and who they ultimately end up hiring. But Mauricio, thank you very much for coming on. It was great talking Cowboys with you and just kind of sifting through all the different emotions that are going on for Cowboys fans right now.
It's definitely been a whirlwind and it's going to continue to be. Thank you, David. Thank you for inviting me on the show. Also a pleasure to talk Cowboys anytime and shout out to you guys. You're doing great work.
Thank you. And you as well. And anybody who isn't following Mauricio yet, go ahead and change that because you get great content from him consistently from A to Z Sports and from his Slack groups that he shares with us on Twitter, where he correctly predicts everything down to the T. So Mauricio, before we go, can you give us your most energetic, most enthusiastic, how about them Cowboys for us?
Oh yeah, I can. Let's go. How about them Cowboys?